of the holidays.
No, there isn't. There really isn't, to be honest with you. That's why I stayed home for the holidays. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Mr. Cardigan, Perry Como, a staple of the 50s. The singer that all housewives love. Yep. No F words. No dirty words. What is that? All right, turn it off already. And here we are in the Savage Nation. Now, the main story that you may have seen on the websites is this. Banker buys $37 million apartment after getting $25 million golden parachute from you for doing nothing. This is an amazing story, but there's more to the story than meets the eye. My headline is a little more succinct. I changed the headline to "What Your Bailout Bought This Pig." Welcome to the Savage Nation. The New York Post ran this story about a man named Peter Krause, who I'm sure is an excellent, fine human being, and a former top executive at Merrill Lynch. He received a $25 million golden parachute after working for only 3 months at Merrill Lynch. Now, the money came from you, of course, through the bailout money. But the interesting story is that he bought a $37 million Park Avenue apartment. Now you say, well, that's his business. It's capitalism. Well, it is, but it may be the people's business. Now, why do I say that? Well, he bought the $37 million palace from two previous owners, and they're both Democrat fundraisers, Carl Spielvogel and Barbara Lee Diamondston Spielvogel. The interesting thing to me, Michael Savage, is that these Democrat fundraisers paid half that for it 2 years ago. So let's see if we can figure this out together. Why would somebody pay twice as much for an apartment on Park Avenue now during a downturn than was paid for it at the peak 2 years ago? That's an interesting question. So he pays $37 million for an apartment to two Democrat fundraisers who paid about $18 million for it 2 years ago. Now, it's interesting to me, and I'm not accusing anyone of wrongdoing, of course, that a former U.S. congressman and Vietnam War ace named Randy Duke Cunningham is in prison for 8 years for doing almost something very similar to this. He bought a house and sold it for a little bit more, $1 million more, a few years later. And that was only $1 million that here. Here's something for $18 million more or something. I would suggest that a U.S. attorney look into this strange transaction. Again, not accusing the Democrat fundraisers Carl Spielvogel or Barbara Lee Diamondston Spielvogel of any wrongdoing. We're asking questions, which is why would Peter Krause pay $37 million for the Park Avenue Palace 2 years after they paid $18 million for it, especially in a down market? Now, that's a very important story, but of course, we have nobody to look into it for us on the Savage Nation. They're all busy seeing what they can make themselves before it all comes down. Girl, on the bottom of the Savage website, michaelsavage.com, there's an interesting note that was sent to me by a friend of mine this morning, Tony, and it says, "What have we learned in two millennia?" Here's what we learned, and it was written, by the way, by Cicero, my favorite author, in 55 B.C. Cicero wrote, "The budget should be balanced, the treasury should be refilled, public debt should be reduced, the arrogance of officialdom should be tempered and controlled, and the assistance to foreign lands should be curtailed, lest Rome become bankrupt. People must again learn to work instead of living on public assistance," close quote. Cicero, 55 B.C. This is the Savage Nation. The phones are open at 1-800-449-8255. The topics are manifold. You want to talk about Gaza, you can talk about it. You want to talk about Huxley, Eyeless in Gaza, you can talk about it. You want to talk about chrome yellow, you can talk about it. You want to talk about chrome pink, you can talk about it. What I want to talk about for a moment while you're calling me at 1-800-449-8255 from anywhere in America is the world through a radish. Now, the reason I'm talking about the world through a radish is because I got screwed last night at a restaurant in San Francisco over a radish. And I want to explain to you how mean people have become and also how stupid they become. There's a place in the city called Tadish's Grill. It's on California Street. I've been in there once or twice in the 15 years I've lived here. I've always seen it as a tourist trap or for locals who don't know any better. But for some reason, after the show last night, I wandered over to the ice skating rink at Justin Herman Plaza, the artificial rink. I love to watch children skate. I like to see the family skate. It's a bit of Currier and Ives. And I left the minute they turned the crack music on. It was nice seeing the children getting excited before they went out on the ice. And the minute they fired up the music at 8 o'clock, I left because it was crack music and I couldn't take it. It wasn't Perry Como. It wasn't Bing Crosby. It wasn't Rudolph. It was nothing like that. It was crack music. It was horrible. And I ran away saying, I don't know who's in charge of this, but he ought to be put out to pasture. How can the people in the Hyatt put up with this garbage, this psychotic noise? So I walked down California Street in San Francisco. It's a beautiful avenue that runs all the way up the hill. And I often walk past Tadish's and look at the Schmendricks waiting online outside to get in. I guess they think it's real San Francisco. I mean, my conversation of the world through a radish is far better than what I've been hearing. I've never heard anything like it. So I know Blagojevich appointed a stooge. He's not going to get anywhere. Even the Democrats are against him because they can't make any money with the jerk. You know, this Blagojevich has some, you know what. My God, this guy's got some pair on him. This guy's either he's nuts. I never saw anything like this. Where does he get the audacity? Where does it come from? You know, I mean, this guy's got some nerve appointing this guy. The Senate's liable to do something. They're liable to take time out from, you know, grabbing funds from Park Avenue condo swaps to actually put in one of their own stooges. What does it matter to me if it's Jesse Jackson Jr. or Chaim Yankel or this guy? What do I care who it is? They're all the same. Does it matter to you whether it's this jerk or Jesse Hi Jackson Jr. or someone else in Chicago? You're going to get a fair representative there? What are you, people nuts? That's why I was talking about the world through a radish. It was not a bad shtick, Eastern European waiters in short jackets, and I got Treblinka. But that was it for me. I ate the fish for lunch. I got so nervous from eating there. Oh, there was one other element I forgot to tell you about. This is a funny part of it. There were two seats open at the counter. I took one. After the beer comes, an elderly lady limps over with a cane and sits next to me. She says, is this occupied? No, sit down, fine. She sits down, starts sneezing and coughing. Now, I'm a germaphobe, I'll tell you right off the bat, number one. But I'm a broadcaster. I cannot afford to get a cold because I'm out of business. She's, I don't mean an occasional sneeze. I'm talking about, like a paroxysm. And it didn't stop. And I'm telling you, it was getting me really crazy. Every nerve went off in me. I said, excuse me, madam, do you have a cold? She says, yes, I do. I said, well, look, I'm going to move. I hope you don't take offense, but I'm leaving. I said, I can't afford to get sick. She says, have you ordered yet? I says, whatever it is, I'm leaving. She says, no. She says, I'll leave. I work here. Okay, great. Thank you. You work here and you're going to sit and sneeze at a counter? You know, unbelievable. I left. I ate only a little bit of the potato and a little of the fish. I had such a reaction. My anxiety level was so high between Treblinka, the waiter, the coffer next to me, you know what I mean, and the $5 radish. I had to get out of there. 1-800-449-8255. Tonight I was going to go to a Basque joint, I know, because I was in the mood to eat squid ink. I read that fish blood has a lot of copper in it. Actually, my friend told me it has a lot of copper in it. And I generally don't eat fish blood. It's interesting to me that the Spanish, when they make paella, they take fish heads and crush them up in the broth and they cook them down. They're very smart. I mean, they're getting all the nutrients out of the fish heads. We in America are squeamish. We throw out most of the good parts of the food, and we eat only the muscle meat. It's a peculiar phenomenon, which is why we have so many degenerative diseases, amongst many other reasons, including the sugar addiction that we have. But I like squid with ink. I used to make it years ago when I was a kid, when the kids were young, whatever. I don't make it anymore. I don't have the time to clean and defrost. But the Basque place, I called. I said, do you still serve the squid with the ink? No, we took it off the menu. I said, why? She says, I don't know. The owner took it off the menu. Why would you take it off the menu? It was the one thing that was unique on Tuesday in this place. She says, I agree with you. So I asked my housekeeper to go find some frozen squid with the ink. I don't know. I'll make her clean it. No one wants to do this anymore. That's why we all wind up eating, you know, fast food with nothing in it. Look, we could talk about politics, too. Israel, Blago, Congress, the crooks, the Park Avenue bailout. Did you hear what I opened with on my website, michaelsavage.com? A banker buys a $37 million apartment after getting $25 million in a buyout from the bailout, and he did virtually nothing for the bailout. And the people who sold him the $37 million apartment bought it for about $18 million 2 years ago, and they just happened to be Democrat fundraisers. Is there a U.S. attorney in New York who heard this tonight, who's got nothing to do but maybe listen to reality? Oh, I don't know what I'm talking about. I know exactly what I'm talking about. The problem is we are living in the most degenerate, corrupt, with the most degenerate, corrupt Congress in American history. It's never been more corrupt, and it all falls on Bush's lap. I don't care what Laura, that dumbbell, has to say. I am so sick of hearing about Laura Bush. Hands off Laura Bush. She's trying to peddle her husband's legacy. His legacy is he should be in leg irons. That's his legacy. You have the most incompetent, corrupt president in American history. The worst commander-in-chief ever. And we're supposed to believe this guy was a good president? What world do you live in? You have any idea what this man did to this country? Do you have any idea what this man did to this nation and is still doing to it? That's why I'm talking about the world through a radish on the Savage Nation. As bad as it is at the top, that's how bad it is at the bottom. You go in a restaurant for a meal, you pay good money, and they screw you for a radish? A tadish, in my opinion? No. You screwed the wrong guy for that radish, Mr. Tadish. Because America's now hearing about the radish at tadish, the $5 radish at tadish with Treblinka the waiter. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I'm on a website during breaks now looking at antique cars. I always wanted a 49 Ford, a 53 Caddy convertible, and certain ship models. I think I'm going to just blow the inheritance that I was about to leave people and spend it on myself.
Savage.
So as I say, it's the world through a radish, the banker buys the $37 million apartment, or Treblinka the waiter. I mean, whatever you want to talk about in the Savage Nation. I want to go back to Treblinka the waiter for a minute because he's a type. This guy could also have played a deckhand in Eisenstein's Battleship Potemkin, if you know the kind of movie I'm talking about. No, it was phenomenal. It's like every archetype that I have tried to avoid my whole life was in this one waiter's face. You know, camp guard, deckhand in Battleship Potemkin, the kind of guy who could have wielded an axe during a pogrom, wiped out an entire village without changing his expression. Says to me, what would you like to start with? Heineken. I mean, what should I have ordered? A Bavarian beer? They didn't have any Bavarian. I figured Heineken is close enough from you know, Holland. He wouldn't hate me. If I ordered like something locally, figure I was gay or something. So I said a Heineken. Didn't placate him. $5 for the radish. Unbelievable. San Francisco, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, good afternoon.
Hello. And what makes you call today?
Oh, you know, I just love your food commentary. I'm in the hospitality industry. I'm a private chef in the East Bay. And, you know, all your comments about food are so right on. One thing I like to do with the squid ink is the squid ink pasta. I used to be a chef out in Hawaii and used to do a squid ink fettuccine, and they just ate it up. And, you know, it's one of the great ways to...
Where do you get squid ink pasta? I've seen it once in a while.
Well, you have to order it specially. Like, when I was in Hawaii, we would get, you know, packets, frozen packets of the squid ink, and we would make our pasta from scratch, and then...
That's a real heavy-duty Sicilian dish. I mean, the real heavy-duty guys, that's what they used to eat. That's scungili. I mean, I didn't eat it because they did. I ate it because I really liked it. I lived on squid for many years. When it was still running free in Monterey Bay, I lived on squid during the 70s. I cooked it for the kids all the time. You can't get it anymore. You know where most of the squid comes from today? China. Now, why would you want any seafood from China? I wouldn't even touch it.
Probably tainted.
Tainted. I'm eating almost exclusively organic vegetables, insofar as I can trust the labeling. And I'm trying to stick to organic products. I will not eat food from China, any food from China. I wouldn't sit on a toilet seat from China. So Michael, you're still a waiter today? I mean, pardon me. I don't mean to be. I meant you're still doing chefing?
Yeah, I'm still doing chefing in the East Bay, and I enjoy it. I do private chef, so I go into people's houses and cook.
Well, you know, my son is heavily into that. He keeps saying to me, "Dad, get a private chef. Most of your problems will be over." I said, "But I like to go out and see people. I mean, where else can I see Treblinka the waiter?"
Exactly. You know, you have to go out and associate and see.
Can I ask you something, Michael, working in the restaurant business? Why is it certain restaurants attract people who scream when they have one drink? There were three girls at the end of the bar. I thought they were going to call a fire engine to put out the fire. Every minute. What was that all? Why did they do that?
They want to be seen. They want to be heard. They're in a, you know, a big name place. And they say, well, if I can make some noise and get some attention, then people will know I'm here, which I think is pointless.
These three girls needed a fire hose to put them out. It was unbelievable to me. Oh, have you ever eaten in this radish place?
Not the radish cottage. No, I have not, sir.
It's interesting. Most people from San Francisco don't eat there, and yet it's called a San Francisco tradition. It's mainly tourists, isn't it?
Yeah. Primarily.
Yeah, they intimidate tourists with that Treblinka face. So where could I find you, try your food, Michael? Anywhere in the Bay Area?
No, I do it personal. It's personal, so I don't have a restaurant at all.
You don't have any diseases, do you?
No, I do not at all. You know,
that's another thing that I'm afraid of with a personal chef. How do you know if the guy's not diseased?
Well, you know, I take my pride in sanitary and sanitation of all preparations.
I'm joking, but it's one of the fears I have about going on, like I've been invited on a private yacht in the Caribbean, you know, over the holidays, you know, just your yacht, blah, blah, blah. So what's so good about that? I mean, it's like a crew. How do I know who they are? Well, how do I know, you know, if they're diseased or crazy or what?
Or escape.
It's like it could be The Shining. I mean, you get stuck on the ship, you're stuck.
What to do? Bring your scuba gear.
Yeah, bring the scuba gear. Very funny, Michael. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Is anyone calling about would Savage visit if waiter leaves? Savage plans for New Year's. That's a good call. Gilbert in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I'm going to pray on New Year's and hope I come out of my financial rut. What are you going to do?
I'm going to run on New Year's Eve and pray I come into my financial rut.
Are you? Wow.
I'm joking. No, I've been thinking about New Year's Eve. It's funny. The few friends that I have asked me what I'm doing New Year's Eve. And I said, we're going to do something in the house. Come on over. Then I said, I don't want to bother. Then today I called someone up. I wanted to take my boat out New Year's Eve to watch fireworks. But the problem with that is that I can't drink if I drive the boat. So I called a captain. I figured I'd hire him to run the boat for me so I can drink a bottle of champagne. But then I checked the tide table, and the tide is low at 8 o'clock. So I don't want to go out in a zero tide on San Francisco Bay, which is exactly 8 o'clock at the gate. Therefore, I will probably stay home and say, well, I wonder why I'm not doing anything New Year's Eve.
Yeah, what's the big deal about it anyways?
Well, it's the amateurs. Mainly amateurs go out. They make idiots of themselves. But I guess it's an American tradition. You know, Guy Lombardo. I'm actually going to be on the radio tomorrow, you know, my regular hours. I decided to be on because a lot of people don't have anything to do or they're going somewhere. They may as well enjoy me. And what are you going to do New Year's Eve? You said you're going to pray?
Yes, I'm going to pray and hope I come out of my financial rut. And can you do me a favor? Can you mail me a magnet of yourself so I can stick on my refrigerator?
A magnet of myself?
Yeah, don't you have a magnet? You like a?
No, we don't sell magnets. I'll tell you what, I'll send you a free book since, you know, you're not doing well. Stay on the line. Let's send Gilbert a copy of Psychological Nudity. What do I care? Go ahead. I'm giving it away. Crazy Eddie. Oh, what did I want to talk about? No one took the bait on the banker thing. You'd think they'd go crazy. No, nothing. Israel's bombing away. They ask why. You know what I love? The idiots in the media. They can't understand why Obama doesn't say anything about Israel and Gaza. He's saying something by saying nothing, you schmucks. He gave them the green light, you idiots. You can't figure it out? Why do you suppose it's in Obama's interest to let Israel go after Gaza like Grant took Richmond, hollowing out the buildings in which Hamas was plotting their demise? Why do you think Obama's advisor said, you know what, Barack, it's not such a bad idea. Let me explain why. Why? Because if Israel cleans up Hamas before you become president, you can then focus on being FDR too. They'll take care of them. Otherwise, it's like a cancer.
that was festering. And I have another little idea about the Israeli strategy that I hope no Iranians are listening, though. That's why I don't want to give it out on the radio. I hope that Hitler isn't listening to the show or any of his minions, his American spies. That's why I'm not going to tell you. But something tells me it may be a little diversion job on the Western Front, when in the middle of the night a few planes are going to give a little fly to the Eastern Front, and the Iranians are going to wake up to 4,000 degrees over Tehran. In selected communities, of course, and in selected neighborhoods, that is. You know, it's 42,000 degrees and cloudy over nuclear reactors in Tehran. I mean, I don't know what's coming, but if I were an Israeli strategist and they pretty much outfoxed Hamas and virtually everybody else by playing possum for over a year, letting them fire their katushas, then went in like Grant took Richmond, I mean, you know, Iran's been threatening to wipe them off the map. It wouldn't be too far removed for me to figure out that in the midst of all of this, they're liable to send, you know, a squadron over to Iran to take care of the nuclear threat from that Hitler piece of garbage. You know, and maybe while he's giving a speech with some of his mullahs, they could go to the seventh. It's a pretty weird religious concept. Children in heaven. What a reward, man. That's a whacked out concept, isn't it? And that's really a whacked out religious concept. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'm goofing around about radishes and food, but you know, this is a big story, but the problem is we don't have a legitimate government in the sense that here's a banker buys a $37 million apartment after getting $25 million buyout with bailout money for doing nothing. The apartment sold 2 years ago for about $18 million. Why would he pay $17 or $18 million more in a down market? Well, I don't know, but the previous owners are Democratic fundraisers Carl Spielvogel and Barbara Lee Diamondston Spielvogel. Now, I'm not suggesting any wrongdoing, of course. As you well know, Democratic fundraisers are never doing any wrong, and they don't do it for any reason other than they love the politicians and they believe in their agendas. They don't do it for any personal gain. You know, they have no other hidden agenda. They're all altruistic in that sense. But the question is, who would pay twice for an apartment 2 years away in a down market? Something is wrong with this case, with this picture. And this is where a guy like the prosecutor, the attorney from Chicago, is needed. We don't have any in America. We have one. One guy, Fitzgerald, in the whole country out of all of them, is willing to stand up and do the right thing when he sees such naked, outright corruption with Blagojevich. The guy does something. Where are the rest of the U.S. attorneys that Bush appointed? Why are they so silent? And now that we're speaking about the wonderful George Bush, why hasn't he pardoned Randy Duke Cunningham? I mean, he's pardoned coke dealers. He's pardoned dope dealers. Why not Randy Duke Cunningham, who's in the slammer for 8 years for about $1 million and a busted Rolls Royce compared to what's been going on Wall Street today? You have any idea that Cunningham did nothing compared to, he's an altar boy compared to what these bums did? This is gangsterism, as far as I can tell. In my opinion, one man's opinion. In my opinion, one man's opinion. Where's the U.S. attorney in New York? Why doesn't he do anything? That's why I'd rather talk about fish heads than talk about politics. It stinks to high heaven. Both sides of the aisle are rotten like a rotting fish. Giacomo, San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael.
Hey.
I'm calling about when you were talking about the squid with the hink. I was
yes.
born in Sicily.
Yes.
And we left Sicily in 1967. I was born about 1 mile from the water. They used to,
yes.
the local fishermen used to go catch the squid, and my mom used to make the pasta with the squid with the ink.
And when now wait, did she squeeze the ink into the flour to make the noodles, or did she squeeze it into the sauce?
Noodle from fresh noodles. And then she would make the squid in a part with
yes. Well, it's interesting that the squid ink, I've tried to find out what it is rich in, which nutrients it's rich in. It's almost unknown. There's almost no writing on it. I find almost no medical literature on what's in the squid ink. But you know what I found out, Giacomo? When a traditional culture eats a certain dish that's very unique, it's usually because, not only because of the taste, but there's usually a medicinal value to that particular dish that the people have put together through trial and error. So, for example, over 1,000 years, people who ate squid ink generally never got a heart attack, for example. I'm making that up. I don't know what the exact relationship is. But there's got to be something beneficial to the squid ink.
There is a big story in Sicily about Mussolini, apart to what he did to Italy.
Yeah.
He said that one time he went to a restaurant, and this man made him a pasta with squid, with a hink. And Mussolini told him, what do you call this dish? He says, this is pasta a la black shirt. No, because Mussolini had a core with a black shirt.
Yes.
And he awarded a gold medal.
I'm surprised he didn't kill him. Anyway, Giacomo, stay on the line. I'm sending you a copy of Psychological Nudity down to San Diego. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Any topic is fair game. Restaurants, food, corruption, government, George Bush's legacy, Israel and Gaza, Eyeless and Gaza, Chrome Yellow, point counterpoint, whatever you want to talk about. Books, movies. Oh, speaking of movies, last night I didn't watch much television. I think I'm going blind from the computer and the television. I really am. My eyes are blurry. This computer's got to stop. I'm up too early. When I started radio in 1994, I didn't use a computer. I used only newspapers, magazine, and the television. And then the computer became the essential ingredient of radio, of television, talk. And I'm on it all the time. Then I watch TV at night. I'm going blind. Really, my vision is terrible. So I got a choice to make. I mean, I don't want to die, you know, a blind man with a cane. So I don't watch. I'm trying to get off it. I turn the screens off. But I'm scanning TV last night, and one of the shows I stopped on is called Intervention on A&E. Intervention on A&E is like a show if you have a junkie in the family or whatever. The whole family tries to do an intervention. And everyone sits with a Kleenex. Why are you hurting me? And, you know, in a way, you can laugh at it. And the other way, you see people's hearts are broken by the weak link, you know. I mean, in a family, these things happen. So last night I was flipping around, and it was an intervention for a junkie daughter. And it was a cracker family, basically, from Alabama. You know, I'm talking average. The grandmother was like 13. No, she was the grandmother, the mother, another sister. I didn't know who was who. They look like they could have been a vice presidential candidate family with John McCain. You know, in the next election, the RNC could pick them to be the So the girl is like not a bad-looking chick, you know, a little goth-like. And she's out of control, like a Spitfire daughter. Everyone's going crazy because she's a junkie. Her boyfriend has earrings in both ears, and he's like a wimp job. And in this scene, they say, where are you going? She says, I got to get $60. I got to get $60. Well, where are you going? I'm going to strip for a guy in a motel. So they go crazy. You can't do them. So then they go to an intervention, and there's some woman who's actually quite good. She tries to tell her that you're breaking everyone's heart. I don't care. I want out of here, blah, blah, blah. So finally the cracker father, who's very stoic, doesn't say a word. He writes her a long letter, and the girl starts to cry. He says, she's, I didn't know I was hurting you, Daddy. And he starts to cry, and everyone, they close up with the Kleenex and the you don't know whether to laugh or to cry. It's an opera, the American opera, all these shows, these reality shows. But the question is, what family would open themselves up to a television camera that has a problem like this? Who would do this with a brain on their head? Would you? What is in it for them? Why would they expose themselves like this? You have a junkie daughter, you hide her. You know, well, just let her go. But why do a television show showing the whole story? I can't follow any of this. It's like a country that's gone insane. Sometimes I feel like I'm the last sane person on the planet, but I know by my callers that there are others out there who see the world the way I do. I never saw anything like it. In other words, if you have a relative you're ashamed of, do you do a TV show about you trying to get this relative, you know, help? And you crying? You know, she was a spoiled younger daughter, so she got away with everything, and that's the end of it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. That's why I'm talking about the radish today and squid ink. It's better than this, you know. I'll take some calls. That's what I'm going to do. Houston, Texas, Barry, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm calling about the fish heads. My wife uses them in gumbo stock, and it's absolutely great. Can't do it. You can't do gumbo without fish heads in the stock.
Now, when you put you first saute the fish heads and crush them, correct?
We just actually make a stock with water and shrimp heads and shrimp shells and crabs and the fish head. We boil it for like 8 or 10 hours, and the fish head basically dissolves.
Yep, you're getting all the calcium, all the chitin is breaking down from the shell of the shrimp, and the shell of the shrimp is made of chitin. It's an amazing thing to do. Chinese soups used to be calcium rich. Well, traditional soups are, because they would boil the bones till they disintegrated. So what you were doing was getting liquefied calcium in the soup. It's another interesting way of getting calcium, which people don't do in America because we don't make soups like that anymore.
And the curious thing you said about the people addicted to sugar, this fish head adds a richness and a sweetness to the gumbo that you would think there was sugar in there, but there's not.
Probably the brains.
And it's very, very good, though. Thank
the you. Brains, the eyes of the fish, things that Americans are squeamish about, you know. Anyway, if you want to talk about rotting fish, fish heads, or the government, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We are talking about Lilliputians in government, shrimp in gumbo, and radishes and tadishes. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I noticed that the Republican National Committee must be listening to my show because they're accusing George Bush of socialism. Now, I'm the first one to have said that George Bush's fiscal policy struck me as fiscal socialism well over a year ago, long before anybody saw what was coming. I knew Bush was a socialist then. And now today, the RNC puts out a draft of a resolution accusing Bush of embracing socialism. What's interesting about this is that they're 100% right. They say we can't be a party of small government, free markets, and low taxes while supporting bailouts and nationalizing industries, which lead to big government, socialism, and high taxes at the expense of individual liberty and freedoms. They're 100% right. And I guess they're listening to the Savage Nation. The problem is, it's a little too late for this. They should have said something 4 years ago when George Bush went on this rampage with the scythe towards capitalism, the scythe that he brought down capitalism with, you know. So, yeah, it's typical Republicanism. Once they lose, they pretend that they're fiscal conservatives. Then you idiots go back into their big tent. And the next thing you know, they're doing it all over again. So I'm very jaundiced on the whole political picture. I have no faith in either party. You know, I'll look at the individual, but all of them are untrustworthy, truthfully, as far as I'm concerned. 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game, including the ones that I mentioned prior to this hour on the Savage Nation. If you just joined us, it's too bad because you missed a very, very good discourse on Treblinka the waiter. who could have played a camp guard in Schindler's List, but I unfortunately got him last night in a fish joint, and he had the nerve to charge me $5 for a radish added to a salad. Can you believe this? Anyway, that's nothing. It's neither here nor there. We talked about squid ink and other ethnic dishes. Interesting stuff. Squid ink. I think that squid... Does anyone out there eat squid ink to this day? It's very hard to get good squid. Most of it's from China. Be very careful. You must find the source of it. I wouldn't eat anything from China. Nothing. Zero. You know, melanin is toxic, as you well know, and it's appearing in foodstuffs, baby food, you name it. I go to a Chinese restaurant Monday that I go off and on with, and the plate itself, the back of it said melanin ware. I went up to the owner. I said, look, I don't mean to be trouble. I said, your food is good, but you're serving food on melanin ware. I said, it's only a matter of time until one of these shyster lawyers of the type who forced you to put in handicapped, you know, in this restaurant, and you complained to me 5 years ago that one of them came around and forced you to do it. They're gonna sue you for melanin wear, as sure as I'm sitting here. He said, no, thank you. You know, what would you like to talk about today on the Savage Nation? Because you're only going to get a short burst at it. Most people are somewhere. Where are they, in St. Bart's? I kind of doubt that my listeners are in St. Bart's. I don't get that feeling that they're partying with the lowest scum on the earth. I mean, come on. You're not on that low level. You know, everything's upside down in America today. The filth that lives on Park Avenue are all criminals, by and large. Thieves, they robbed America blind. Are you supposed to look up to them? You look down upon them. They've been looking down on you. They all belong in an orange jumpsuit, as far as I'm concerned. The lowest of the low. You know, I told you that there's actually a silver lining to Madoff's chicanery. The alleged theft of $50 billion by that nice, wonderful, terrific boy on Park Avenue, Madoff. A wonderful man, that Bernie. Wonderful. Bernie Madoff rips off $50 billion, allegedly. And the only silver lining that I could see is that some of the charities were funding some of the most whack job left-wing programs in America. So some of the charities that he bankrupted were funding some of the most anti-American projects you've ever seen, such as the Death Row Project, trying to make sure that there was no the death penalty clinic. In other words, clinic. Whenever you hear clinic, you better reach for your Glock. It means they're coming for you. But the death penalty clinic. It's not clinic. Very clinical. A bunch of left-wing whack jobs who have never been raped or mugged who think that anyone on death row is an innocent victim, you know. It's like saying Hamas is a victim now in the Middle East. Yeah, victim, victim, victim. Everyone's a victim. Speaking of false victimhood, there's a fascinating article that I linked up on michaelsavage.com about the changes going on in once liberal regions of Europe. And I have to refer you to the story. It's very interesting what's going on in Europe right now. It seems to me that the pendulum is about to swing. My top left story is headlined, "What Your Bailout Bought This Pig." That's my headline. And I happen to like pigs. But down on the website, where's this one? Thai stripper gave men HIV, says ex-husband. No, that's not it. I'm looking for the story. 2008 was the year man-made global warming was disproved. You ought to read that one. Send the copy to Al Gore, the man who no one can find. You know, during cold spells, he disappears. Here it is. From the left wing, a call to end Dutch notion of tolerance. This comes from the International Herald Tribune. And here are the Netherlands, which welcomed Islamic immigrants, bent over backwards for Islamic immigrants, tried to prove that they weren't racist to the Islamic immigrants. They woke up, one day they woke up with some of their leading cultural figures dead. The most notable being Vincent van Gogh's, the filmmaker, Theo van Gogh, a grandnephew, I think, of Vincent, who was murdered by a Muslim. Pim Fortuyn, who was later murdered by a Muslim. And now suddenly the left wing has done a turnabout where they are saying enough is enough. We're not going to accommodate you anymore. You better start becoming Dutch. Learn the language. Become a member of this culture or get out. Now, that's the left wing in Holland, not the right wing. It hasn't happened here in America yet, because the left wing is so doped up in this country that until they wind up with a knife in their chest for the people they've told you to be tolerant of, they won't wake up. The article's interesting. From the left, a call to end the current Dutch notion of tolerance, the one where integration of Muslim immigrants cross Dutch identity. Now, it's interesting that in 2006, only 24% of the voters in Holland considered this issue very important. But now the majority of people in Holland consider it a very important issue because they're losing their country to the Muslim immigrants. Why? Because they won't learn the language. They won't join the humanistic elements of Dutch society. They will not emancipate their women. They still cherish châtel. And so, therefore, even the left has had enough with it. And one of them says, the success of the integration process is hindered by the disproportionate number of non-natives involved in criminality and troublemaking, by men who refuse to shake hands with women, by burqas and separate courses for women on citizenship. And he says, we have to stop the existence of parallel societies within our society. Oh, if only this country were to wake up before it's too late, you know. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage Nation, Joe Stafford. Very interesting song. This song was popular when the 53 Buick Roadmaster was a big deal. I saw one today. I went over to the Ferrari dealer. I got a, my brake pedal is stuck, this and that, so I took it in. And the guy was working on a 1953 Buick Roadmaster convertible in a Ferrari dealership. I said, what's this? He said, I'm doing a guy a favor. I love high-end garages. There's something to look at. So I said, you mind if I go around? He said, no. I go to see another car. All the wheels are off it. And I said, well, what's wrong with this one? It was an F430. He said, the guy smashed into a retaining wall, you know, a low wall. The wheel hit it, and it broke the wishbone arm on the right side. It cracked. It's an aluminum, you know, part. I said, how much is that repair? He said, $55,000. I said, how much? He said, $55,000 for the right rear wheel wishbone assembly. I mean, what should it cost? These are handmade cars. I said, oh, my God. That's what a piece of aluminum. They're hand-forged. I mean, what are you? They're made out of something, you know. It just shows you, you know, there's a whole, different worlds within worlds within worlds. Worlds within worlds. That's why I'm talking about various things today in the Savage Nation. There's worlds within worlds. And I was talking earlier about squid ink, a very obscure topic, I admit. I would say maybe like one out of a million people ever eat that stuff. Austin, Texas, Joe must be one out of that million. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Michael. Wanted to let you know that squid blood is blue, not red as it is in humans. And you're right about the copper-containing compound. It's called hemocyanin, and it's kind of similar to our hemoglobin. So,
isn't that interesting? It is blue.
Yes, it is.
And the reason I'm interested in copper right now is because I have a high triglycerides. I have reversed LDL HDLs. I have that for years, and I don't want to take Lipitor or any of the other drugs because I tried it once. It got me very sick after 3 days. I'm going to try to control it by taking by ingesting extra copper. It's very interesting that if you study Lipitor or any of the other anti-cholesterol drugs, part of their of the method of method of functioning of these Lipitor-like compounds is by interfering with the copper reductase system. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. It's a very interesting biomedical phenomenon. But it has to do with hemoglobin, and by inhibiting – okay, how does Lipitor work? It inhibits a certain enzyme which produces cholesterol. So one of the ways it inhibits this enzyme is through a medical means, a biochemical means that's very similar to increasing levels of copper. And copper is deficient in most of our diets because copper is found in very interesting foods, pecans, sunflower seeds, walnuts, black pepper, oysters, raw oysters, which I won't eat because they're mostly contaminated. But it's also probably found in fish blood, which we don't eat. And that led me to the squidding concept. But you're confirming what I suspect to be true. You're a former marine biologist, I understand.
Well, just a layman, as a scuba diver and taking an interest in marine biology, I always found octopus and squid very interesting, and I had a sixth grade teacher who introduced us to all kinds of foods from around the world, and you know, I was the guinea pig that got to taste everything first, and you know,
when you kill a squid or when it shoots its ink, it's blue in the water, a dark blue, isn't it?
Well, it can go anywhere from black to, which is octopus. The squid is kind of a blue-black, all the way down to the cuttlefish, which is also a form of the cephalopods, like everything from cuttlefish to octopus, squid.
What color is their ink, the cuttlefish?
It's just brown, but squid is blue-black.
Isn't that interesting? Because that's what I've been – I mean, years ago when I made the stuff, it was always blue-black.
Yeah, and it's got vitamin B3 in it, B12, potassium, phosphorus, selenium. You know,
give me the name of that compound you mentioned. Which one did you mention?
QNC that's in their copper containing compound in their blood, which is called hemocyanin, and I'll spell that for you. I'm kind of
it's hemocyanin. I got it.
H-A-E-M-O.
Yeah, cyanin. I got it. I have a degree. Copper containing compound. Interesting. Well, now I got to start eating a lot of squid. I'm gonna do the Sicilian diet now.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call, my friend. 1-800-449-8255. It's better than the radish that I ate last night. I could have bought a squid farm for what he charged me. Could have bought a whole squid. Scungili, squid, all of the sea creatures. Well, most of the folklore is connected to the sexual. If you actually look into most folkloric foods, it's because the male feels enhancement from that particular food. And there's actually a medical explanation for the shellfish as well, because of the high zinc content is one of the reasons that it has that particular property. But there's probably, now that I look into it, it's got more to do probably with the natural juices in the shellfish than it does with the zinc. And those are copper-containing elements, and as well, copper and zinc-containing elements, you know. But the problem with the shellfish today is the origin. Where is it coming from? Unless it's grown in a pure environment, you're ingesting toxic heavy metals with it, and particularly those from China. I'm sorry, you have to be clear about it. And therefore, it's very difficult to really eat today without any degree of assurance. So at a certain point, people throw their hands up and they just say, you know what, I can't take it anymore. I'm just going to eat, and heck with it. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, because I can't take it anymore. I can't have a label on everything that I eat. But I wonder if that's true for the president of the United States, the man who made sure that food labels became so difficult that you wouldn't know where anything came from. I wonder if the White House is quick to eat foods imported from Melanin Land, or if they eat organic. You know, that's something that I really like to learn. I can guarantee you they're not eating off-the-shelf food. This I can guarantee you. I guarantee you that what's good for us is not the same as what's good for them. They're not eating seafood from China. You are. 1-8, could you play that, see the USA in a Chevrolet? You know, the Chevy's probably going to be out of business the way this thing is going. All these companies gone with the wind in my lifetime. Like Dumont. It's like Dumont on wheels.
America's
gone.
Asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA.
I haven't seen any 65 Toyotas, have you? How come I have a 65 Cadillac if U.S. cars are so bad? How come this car is still rolling? Have you seen a 65 Datsun lately? Still on the road? I haven't. They're piles of junk. I don't know what he said. American cars are no good. That's such garbage. That's such liberal crap. American cars are fabulous. I don't own one, but I hear they're good.
Savage.
You know, I want to go into diet for a minute. Everybody listening to the show is interested in good health, and, you know, we all watch our cholesterol and fats, and we've all been lectured on this, and most men now are either on Lipitor or something else. But there are nutritional elements related to heart disease in general and atherosclerosis in particular, which we all know, but it's very complex. And many of us take high doses of vitamin C or ascorbic acid without understanding that high doses of vitamin C can make dietary copper relatively unavailable for regulating cholesterol metabolism, which is very interesting. Meaning, let's say you're taking mega doses of vitamin C. Well, that's of benefit to a certain extent. I've used it for 35 years. But it interferes with the availability of copper, okay? And copper regulates cholesterol metabolism. So what you get, one of the benefits of high intake of ascorbic acid is preventing the oxidation of saturated fats, okay? But on the other hand, it inhibits copper. Usage of copper, and copper helps regulate cholesterol metabolism. That's why people are confused, because the medical establishment itself is confused, and rightly so, because biomedicine is extremely complicated. It's not as clear-cut as we would like it to be. And that leads us back to traditional diets as the way to go in many cases with mild supplementation. Now, I wrote books on this in 1980-82. I remember my first book in this field was called The Skeptical Nutritionist, published in 1983 by Macmillan Publishing. It created a stir within educated medical communities, but not in the general public. It was a very good book, The Skeptical Nutritionist. Now, remember when I published it, 1983. So I go back a long way in this field, and I have a genuine, you know, degree in the field from a great institution in nutrition, a PhD, which is very important because today everyone says, oh, I'm a nutritionist. What does it mean? Nothing. What does that mean, I'm a nutritionist? Usually it means nothing. It means they read a few articles in a magazine. They mean well, and maybe they'll help you lose weight, and there's nothing wrong with paying attention to it, but they don't understand science or medicine by and large. But what I'm getting at is my book, 1983, The Skeptical Nutritionist, I wrote about ethnic diets. And I was one of the first to popularize the concept of looking at our ethnic diets as a guide as to what we should be eating. Now, on the face of it, that sounds easy. You say to yourself, well, I'm Italian, so I'm going to eat a typical Italian diet. Or you say, well, I'm Jewish, so I'm going to eat a typical Jewish diet. Or take any other ethnic group. The problem is none of the ethnic diets that you are eating, if you're Jewish or Italian, for example, are traditional. What you consider to be traditional Italian food is actually a product of extreme affluence in the 19th century. It's 19th or 20th century holiday Italian food. A traditional Italian diet was not, you know, veal parmesan with spumoni ice cream. It was probably a whole grain pasta with extremely low amounts of protein with a high amount of vegetables because that's what the people had in their gardens. That is a traditional Italian diet, which with, of course, olive oil, which we all know. We all know about the Mediterranean diet. So when you say traditional, you have to understand what you're talking about. When you say, I'm Jewish, so I should eat Jewish food because I'm adapted for it. Yeah, well, that would be true, but that would mean you'd have to be eating Yemenite food. The traditional Jewish diet would be an Arabic diet from Yemen. It wouldn't be corned beef sandwiches or foods of that nature. That's 19th century Polish food. And so I wrote this in 1983. It was a fascinating book. And as I say, educated professionals love the book. It was way ahead of its time, as I am in everything, including politics, which is why it's difficult. When you're ahead of your time, you're either scorned, you're laughed at, you're called crazy. It's been true for me my whole life. I remember when I entered the University of California at Berkeley, and I'm going to talk about it for a minute or two. I never do, but this is as good a time as any. I had already achieved and earned two major master's degrees, major league, not the fake master's degrees. And when I say major league, my second master's degree was so excellent that the thesis was published in a journal published by Harvard University. It should have been a PhD at the time, but I had trouble with the professor. He was a real SOB. So I left that school. And after two master's degrees, I went to California. I enrolled at University of California at Berkeley. And I worked towards an interdisciplinary PhD in human nutrition, epidemiology, and medical anthropology, which was a pioneering concept at the time. And I earned a degree in 3 years, which is almost a world record. There are people still there 20 years later who haven't finished their thesis. But when I put my mind to something, I do. Okay, anyway, I did that, and I was always interested in ethnic diets. And the reason I was interested in it then is the same reason I'm speaking with you today, the Savage Nation, about these diets today. Because having explained to you how complex biomedicine really is, how complex vitamin science really is, how complex all of the interactions in the human body really are, it's very difficult to come up with a vitamin solution to all of your problems. Because if you do one thing, you're interfering with another. And so then I said, well, then let's look back at ethnic diets. And that became a fascinating idea in the 1970s when I first looked into it. And to be honest with you, it's as an interesting idea for me today as it was then. And maybe I'll either take that book, revisit it and rewrite it and reissue it this year, only because I want to get interested in nutrition and chemistry and plants again. And again, I don't need to sell 8 million books to be justified. If I sell 20,000 of these over the next year to my audience, that's fine. I don't need 2 million books. It's not a numbers game to me. It's a quality game. And I think that it's very important that I help people understand how complex this whole world of medicine, nutrition, et cetera, really is, and maybe help you understand what your ethnic background really is and what your traditional ethnic diet should be based upon. You're certainly not going to go back to what your ancestors ate in Greece, but you're going to maybe understand that it was a much simpler diet than what you are eating today. So you say, well, I try to eat simply. Well, you're really not eating simply enough. A really simple diet would be a whole grain diet, vegetables, and very small amounts of animal protein. That would be it. That would be a very traditional diet for virtually, well, most of the ethnic groups on the planet, because that's what was available, readily available. And yet there's a paradox here, too. For example, where was the lowest rate of coronary heart disease found on Earth? It was found amongst a certain group of Eskimo people, native Eskimo people. They call the people Aleuts. But we're talking about Greenland Eskimos had the lowest rate of heart disease known in the world. Well, what do they eat? Whale blubber, seal blubber. You say that's impossible. How could these people eat such high fats? A high-fat diet that would kill you probably if you ate terrestrial animals with that fat content, meaning a cow, you'd be dead in a very short period of time. You would die of hypercholesterolemia by the time you're 13. So how is it that the Greenland Eskimo eats a high-fat diet of blubber, whale blubber, seal blubber, and doesn't get a heart attack? Well, I looked into that. The reason was quite evident. It is because the composition of those fats are different than the composition of cows that are fed not grain. They're not grain-fed cows that we eat, by and large. They're eating pellets, and the pellets are the composition of the pellets alter the fats and everything else in the animal. The fat in the whale, the blubber in the whale, the blubber in the seal, was extremely rich in micronutrients that are cardioprotective, and the omega-6 fatty acids in particular. Not the omega-3s, the omega-6s, if I remember correctly, because the whale ate plankton. The whale sieves through the ocean and brings in great gobs, tons of plankton, micro creatures. And so the blubber of the whale is likewise made up chemically to a great extent of the starter compounds found in plankton. So that explains why, although the Greenland Eskimo the Greenland Eskimo has a high blubber, a high fat diet, they have low rates of heart disease. It's because the type of fat they're eating is different than the fats that we eat in our society. I just figured I'd do nutrition for a minute. You know what I'm saying? And I'm fascinated by it again because as I'm getting more and more interested in what I want to do for the rest of my years, other than radio, now that I'm relaxing more, is I want to go back to what I was doing many, many decades ago, or several decades ago, not many, which is nutrition, herbal medicine, and things of that nature. And I also want to buy cars that I always wanted. That's what I think I want to do, is collect some certain cars from the 1950s that I've always. They're not even expensive, to be honest with you. I'm still a car, a bit of a car buff. Certain you would just indulge. Ship models I like. I like certain cars. So if you got a ship model you want to leave to me, the phone number is 1-800-449-82. I don't eat listener food. Any listener foods are sent back. Dear Mike, we baked this cake just for you. Harry and Bob, Folsom Street. Thanks, guys. Thanks for thinking of me. I think I'll skip that cake. San Francisco, Emil, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I got to warn you, Mike. You keep eating all that shellfish, you're going to end up like a drain in a Greek locker room. Be careful.
Why?
Oh, you're going to let the hair come out all over.
You're saying shellfish induces hair growth?
Oh, yeah, and all that calamari. Oh, yeah, all over. You'll be wearing a sweater all year long.
I'll be look like I'm wearing a sweater.
Hey, Mike, I got to know, are you going to throw in with me or not? I'm running for chief of police. I'm going to take Heather Fong's place.
Hey, Emil, come on. You're retired from the DEA, if I remember correctly. How could you run for police chief?
I can do it. I figure I'm always running my mouth about what I could do for the city. So I'm finally going to, you know, put it into action. I submitted my application, and I put the word out, and hopefully I'll be...
Well, if you want that position, Emil, you definitely don't want my endorsement in San Francisco.
No, I think you're good for San Francisco. I think you're...
No, I'm good for San Francisco, which is why my endorsement is no good. It's run by whack job left-wing maniacs who'll never pick a guy like you with hair on his arms. They'll pick another freak show.
Tell them how it is. I'm going to get it off my...
They'll pick another freak show. They'll pick some guy who wears panties underneath his uniform.
Well, we'll straighten it out, Mike.
They'll pick a cross-dresser under the uniform before they pick you.
You watch me, Mike. You'll see. I'll own North Beach. I'll straighten it out like it was in the 60s.
All right, so Emil, where can I, other than your Sicilian clubhouse up there on Rush on Potrero Hill, where can I get squid with ink?
Mona Lisa in North Beach on Columbus.
They sell squid?
Oh, yeah. Hey, go ahead. Speak to Maurizio. He can do it for you.
I haven't eaten in there in 30 years. I didn't even know it was still there.
You know, you're looking for something certain. He's the guy.
All right, my friend. Good luck in your quest to become police chief. You'll have to get a hat that actually, you can't wear Heather Fong's hat. That's going into the Ripley's Museum of, believe it or not, because it's that small.
Oh,
it still didn't fit. It still didn't fit her head. It fell off. Amy, thanks for the call. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I didn't mean to get too technical, and I realize this is a general radio talk show about politics, with a little bit of restaurant and humor thrown in. But, you know, this was my field for so many years. Once in a while, it pops back out because food is related, clearly related to health, and food and diet are related. Nutrition is related to health and diet, so we may as well talk about it once in a while. I think everyone's interested in it. But I just want to leave a little bit more on the table with this. Those of you who've been following this, so many men listening to this show, and possibly women today as well, are taking statins. The newest cholesterol drugs called statins or statins, okay? And I think they're controversial. I tried them for a while. I got terrible pains in my hands because I know it causes that in some people. Me, of course, it did. What's interesting is that these cholesterol-lowering drugs act on HMG-CoA reductase. And that's a very interesting fact. And that is an enzyme. Now, what does it have to do with cholesterol? Well, the interesting thing is that these cholesterol-lowering drugs are designed to inhibit the activity of this enzyme, HMG-CoA reductase, and that lowers cholesterol very efficiently, meaning if you inhibit the activity of this enzyme with these anti-cholesterol drug statins, you're going to reduce the production of cholesterol. Well, it also turns out that 20 independent laboratories around the world have shown that copper deficiency raises cholesterol levels in animals. When people are deprived of copper, their cholesterol levels shoot upward, similar to what happens in animals that are deprived of the mineral copper. And so what I'm getting at is, if you have a high cholesterol problem, it could be that you're not getting enough copper in your diet, but I want to caution you to not take copper supplements, because too much copper can kill you. And there's the rub. It's how much do you take? So I'm saying increase the foods rich in copper. What are they? I told you, avocado is another one of them. Oysters are a very rich source. I don't eat them because most oysters today are from waters that are not reliable. Black pepper is very rich in copper, but how much of that can you eat? So the nuts are the next major source. Sunflower seeds, pecans, walnuts. You can get raw, unsalted, roasted varieties of these and start supplementing with them, like in Russia. Traditionally, people in Russia have eaten sunflower seeds for ages. They didn't know it was healthy, but it was readily available. The sunflower grows in the steppes of Russia. So, again, that's another healthful food to be eating. You know, eat your sunflower seeds. In addition to being rich in copper, it's rich in other nutrients. But there's the cholesterol connection, and I think it's worth talking about. Anyway, I think in 2009 I'm going to write a new book on nutrition, incorporating all of this esoteric knowledge and boiling it down for the average listener reader who wants to maybe take a new approach to health and diet. Because I think there's too much confusion out there. And I don't think that there are any many geniuses in the field right now who are writing on this subject in a very clear way. You know, the age of Linus Pauling is long over. And all we've had are Lilliputians trying to disprove Linus Pauling by running fraudulent studies. Either they run a study with too little vitamin E, or they run a study with only one tocopherol as opposed to mixed tocopherols, and then they tell you that vitamin E doesn't work at all or it's actually harmful. Well, they don't use mixed tocopherols, and they don't use enough of the vitamin E in the right amount, in the right way. It's the same with the vitamin C studies. They're debunking a giant, and they're all Lilliputians, and most of them are in the employ of the drug companies. Just as I've been warning you about your children being drugged to death, unnecessarily prescribed drugs for diseases that don't even exist by quack doctors who, it turns out, were working for drug companies, the same is true for you. You're being told you have diseases that don't even exist in some cases, and then you're being medicated for diseases which don't exist in order to make certain that the profits for the drug companies continue to rise. And so, as I say, the solution here is knowledge. Knowledge is power in politics as much as it is in health and nutrition. The problem with politics is that there isn't much knowledge. It's mostly propaganda. Most of the media specializes in sound bites and propaganda. They rarely look into the actual procedures that are involved in what's causing things that are going on in our society. For example, the economic meltdown. You think it happened by accident? There are simple explanations. It is true. But the simplest explanation for the economic meltdown is an age-old one. Thievery by lying, thieving bureaucrats. You have to look no further, in my opinion, than the Treasury Department and George Bush's administration. Now, the reason the Democrats are looking the other way is because they're part and parcel with the exact same thievery and chicanery, in my opinion. Look no further than the lead story on MichaelSavage.com linked up from the New York Post. Without accusing this fine gentleman of anything, here's a man who buys an apartment for $35 million from two Democrat fundraisers who paid half that amount, about $18 million, 2 years ago. Now, why would he pay $35 million in a down market for an apartment they bought 2 years ago for $18 million? They're Democrat fundraisers. Could it be there's some quid pro quo somewhere along the way with the bailout? You know what I'm saying? Where is that U.S. attorney in New York that we need so desperately along the lines of the U.S. attorney that we have in the Chicago area? Answer. Owned lock, stock, and barrel by both parties.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity.
Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Monday night, I just want to get into dietary for a minute. Monday night, I got to tell you, I had an epiphany in cooking in my house. I got to tell you, I'm somehow influenced sometimes by stories. In other words, if I tell a story about Italy or Italian, I wind up eating Italian food. If that day I'm excited over an Indian story, I'll eat Indian food. Monday night, I had gone shopping at my local market. I would give out his name. He's a nice guy, but I don't want people to look for me there. And I said, I can't find calamari steaks. So he said, I got them in the back. They're frozen in a box. He took them out of the box for me with a hammer and a knife. He broke them apart. Then he has a machine. He put each one in a package that takes the air out and resealed it with the air out of it. And he gave me calamari steaks. It cost me less than $2 a piece. Can you imagine how much they cost even retail? I come home that night. I was in a mood for a calamari steak with mushroom sauce. Now, I've never had it served with mushroom sauce, but because the other member of the dinner wanted a steak, not calamari, I said, I want to make a mushroom sauce for the first time in my life. So I defrosted the calamari on the cold water. Never use hot water when defrosting virtually anything, because if you use hot water, you're partially cooking it, which is very dangerous. Only defrost using cold water. And then you take the plastic off, okay, then you dry them, blah, blah, blah. You only cook them 3-4 minutes on each side in a very hot pan with very little oil, or else it'll get soggy. And make sure you got a little parsley chopped up. Anyway, I made a mushroom sauce that was so good. No butter, no cream, and I defy you to be able to discern whether there was cream or butter in it. I never had anything like it. I slept like a baby. I woke up feeling like I had velvet between my joints. I felt so good that I figured I needed to feel bad. So last night, I ordered bad Italian food from a local restaurant. It wasn't bad. It's old-style, like Bronx, Staten Island, Brooklyn Italian food, which is actually a pleasure compared to the upscale, white tablecloth, shishi, bad Italian food kind of restaurants that you find all over, you know, the suburbs. I'm talking meat sauce that's thick, like really heavy, you know, really heavy, like your grandmother made. Your grandmother, not mine. And I got a meat dish, a veal piccata. Then there was – I always eat the other dish on the table. Have you ever seen this going on in restaurants? This goes on for the last number of years. Like, men are on low-fat diets. I love to watch this in restaurants. Men over, like, 40. So the wife usually orders a meal that she knows her husband wants, and he orders something lean.
Oh, I'm the lean. Yeah, something not – no salt and no cream, no butter. No. Make it light. Make it light. No cream, no butter.
So he gets this lean dish. She gets this, you know, gut-busting phenomenal dish on her side. Knowing that he's going to pick it up late. And the guy always eats her meal from his side. And she picks at his dish. She eats the lean dish off his plate. And he's every minute. The fork is the boarding house reach across the table to her dish. I love to watch this. It goes on consistently. So I overindulged. I had nightmares last night from the meat. If I eat meat late, one nightmare after another. I had a nightmare. I was on Broadway in San Francisco in my car, which is a great car, and it wouldn't go forward, only backwards. You ever hear a dream like this? I tried to go forward, and it would go backwards. So I said, I got to get this car parked because I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. I don't know what I'm doing with Europe. Dreams are crazy. But my whole dream was about getting the car parked safely so that the dealer could pick it up the next day. But I knew if I left it on Broadway, they would tow it away that night in San Francisco. So I tried to back it down a street, and it was all full of coal. Oh, my God, what a horrible dream. So as I drove into San Francisco today, I went down that very street to see if my car would suddenly stop and only go backwards. No, but it turned out it was only a nightmare from the meat.
Marty, keep in the art,
my favorite song from the years I spent in the Fiji Islands listening to Indian music on the squeaky radio.
I want Mercedes. Sister has Mercedes. Husband better earn her.
I want Mercedes. A Prius. I want Mercedes. Has Mercedes. Not easily, Prius. You're not a big man.
In 1815, the American commander Stephen Decatur, and we're talking 1815, sent to stop the Barbary pirates, that was the pirates of those days, in the Mediterranean. He captured the flagship of the Algerian pirates and forced an agreement. When the Algerians later repudiated the agreement, the British and Dutch bombarded Algiers. Now, today, the solution would be to bomb the port of Eyl, E-Y-L, which is the main pirate base on the Somali coast. That would stop it. But that would require a UN Security Council resolution. Oh, right. That's really going to happen. So we're wringing our hands. All the laws are written in favor of the pirates right now. The effort needs to be stepped up into a real military gear. Bomb their cities. Take their families hostage. And it's the end of the piracy. Now, if you'd rather I talk about an easy mushroom sauce instead of these affairs, fine. Fine. Years ago, there was a firm measures taken against pirates. An expert maritime writer, Dr. David Cordingly, wrote a book called Life Among the Pirates, and he said there would often be a show trial in London, Jamaica, Boston, or Charleston when they were captured. That was followed by a public hanging, and the bodies would be left swinging on the gallows at the entrance to harbors. Sailors would draw the conclusion that piracy was not a good career option. But today, the authorities consist of petticoats rather than real warriors. And that's the story. So you take your 8 ounces of sliced mushrooms. They could be button or baby bellas, cremini. I like the whites. You chop them up. Don't quarter them, eighth them, and then even chop them again. You take 1 tablespoon of olive oil. You take a tablespoon of that Smart Balance if you don't want to use butter, which I don't use. You can use a half a cup of dry red wine, but I would prefer drinking it instead of wasting it in a sauce. Now, the important part of this recipe is the beef broth. I use organic beef broth. There's nothing like it. You don't want to use anything else. Now, on the side, you get 2 tablespoons of flour ready and 3 tablespoons of cold water. This is going to thicken your gravy. You get your salt, your pepper. You get a teaspoon of chopped parsley. I don't like dried. I like fresh. Take the stems off. Chop up the leaves. You saute the mushrooms in the oil and the Smart Balance. Now, you could add your red wine. Simmer a few minutes. Then you add the beef broth. Simmer a bit, about 5 minutes. You then take the flour and the cold water pre-mixed, and you whisk it, you know, till it's smooth. You stir that into the mushrooms while they're cooking until it's blended. Then it's almost done. Another minute, thickened, bing. If it's too thick, add more broth. And then you add parsley and salt and pepper, and you got about 1.5-2 cups of a mushroom sauce that I think is unbelievable. And you could put it on steak, or you could put it on calamari, as I did. I loved it. That's why I'm talking about mushroom sauce, because if I can't talk about how to run the U.S. Navy, I may as well talk about what I really know. I don't know anything, right? No, leave it to the guy with the iPod. He's the expert. Leave it to him. Like Paulson's the expert on the economy. Oh, yeah. Leave it to him. He'll make a rule up anytime he wants. He can give his friends another billion dollar bonus. 20 million, 30 million, 50 billion. What's the difference? It's your money, right? That's all. They make up rules as they go along. And since nobody's in charge, nobody's at the helm, and the ship of state is lurching and listing because we have a captain who's out of control, not even on the bridge. He's already abandoned ship, Bush. It's like abandoned ship, man overboard. Where's the captain? He's chopping wood in Crawford. He's getting ready to build his library. Imagine the library, Bush Library. It's going to be a top site for visitors, the Bush Library, like the Clinton Library, the library, L-I-E-B-U-R-Y, I said 10 years ago, but no one heard me. They just stole it 2 years later. Another library. What is a library? It's a slush fund for a former president. Library. They all have libraries. Oh, can't wait to go in and see. I can't wait to hear Bush's tapes, Bush's famous speeches. You know, we have nothing to fear, but, I mean, he's not said anything in 8 years that anyone will remember. Nothing. There's not a sentence said by George Bush that will be remembered, ever. So what do you need a library for? He never wrote anything anyone will remember. He never said anything anyone will remember. So what's a library? A slush fund for former presidents. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah, look, I want to give you $12 million for your library. Terrific. Martha, could you please talk to this guy? in the barbershop.
Savage.
And now on to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Debbie, KNEW San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. How do you do? Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Savage, I do suffer from psychological and psychiatric illness, and I denied it for many, many years, having heard stories of my grandmother in New York, who at a mummer's parade had just been released from a psychiatric hospital and was a little too happy, so was returned by Black Wagon to suffer another round of electroshock therapy. So growing up, when I myself found myself to suffer from similar symptomologies, refused to go get help. And I'll tell you, I do believe that humans, and I find it interesting that rather than recognizing that we do produce very...
All right, so but what is your main point? Of course there's mental illness. There's always been, you know, marginally crazy people and overtly crazy people. We know that. So what is it that we're disagreeing on?
Well, I think it's not subjective, sir. I think that there is a scientific way of producing diagnoses by way of examining common symptomologies and behavior.
It's not that precise. That's the point, and that's where the rub lies. The doctors would have you believe that it's easy to diagnose and definitively diagnose that mental illness, and I disagree entirely. It's not that easy. Now, I've seen brain scan studies, don't get me wrong. I've seen the different colorations in schizophrenics and others, but we have no fundamental argument here. In other words, I know there are people who are unstable. I know there are people who are totally crazy, and I know people who are rock steady and never suffer any such orientation. So where the argument arises is, can we control some of these proclivities through means other than medication is the only argument that I think we're having.
Well, I definitely think it can be controlled through medication. The disappointment...
No, you didn't hear me. You see, you went right over what I said. I said, can some of these symptoms or conditions be controlled with means other than medication?
I think it depends to what extent an individual is suffering. In my case, the answer is no. I spent many, many years seeking out. I went to Marin County. I saw the best nutritional therapist, and I wish I could say their names on air.
Did you try megadoses? I'm going to pick one thing out of the air. Did you try massive doses of niacin?
Sir, I tried niacin until my skin was so red. I look like...
I'm only asking because I want to know how far you went along with nutritional therapies. Of course, they're not going to work in all cases, but you did try Dr. Hoffer's niacin therapy.
I had more niacin in my blood. I went to Oregon. I went to L.A. I had neurosurgery for a very bizarre,
They looked at your iron levels. They looked at your folic acid levels, correct?
Everything. I had more blood panels drawn from me.
You went that route. The route didn't help you, and now you're on major antipsychiatric drugs, and you feel better, correct?
I absolutely feel better, and I've been on
Fine. Well, no one's arguing with that. But I'm saying don't put children on Ritalin the minute they show signs of being a boy.
I absolutely agree with that as well.
All right, so there's no argument. You'll get me crazy if I keep talking to you another three minutes. Three more minutes, I'll need to reach for a pill. 1-800-449-8255. You can get me. You can go crazy from it. I once went and visited a holy man, a religious teacher. He was a former pugilist, a boxer, who then went into religion and became a religious guy. But he still maintained the man of the street. He knew reality. In other words, he didn't come from like an effete background. I was suffering at the time through various things that were going on in my life, mainly societal social engineering that made me feel like a failure because I was not granted what I had earned because they wanted to put people with less qualifications and of other races and of other sexual orientations. Total morons, by the way, given jobs, which is why the university has fundamentally collapsed in America in many departments, certainly not in all. And I was feeling it. I had two young children. I didn't know what was wrong. I killed myself. I did great work. I published my dissertation at Harvard, at a Harvard University journal. I mean, it was pretty good stuff that I did. And they hired whack job moron feminist tree huggers or people from countries of origin other than the United States of America to make them feel good and to look good on the brochures. So I go to see this holy man, and he says to me, what is exactly your problem? And I explain it to him. And he says to me, you know, we have a saying which says that if you take a stick and you put it into a dog, he used the word, I can't say it, let's say dog waste, I'll put it that way on the show. And he says, no matter which way you turn the stick, it's still dog waste. And he said, now, if you don't mind, I have to excuse myself right now. I got very mad at him. I was fuming because I wanted some mystical experience in this holy man's office. He told me, if you take a stick and you put it in, you know what, and no matter how you move the stick around, it's still you know what. What he was telling me is stop moving the stick around and you know what. And he was right. See, so there are many ways to cure problems. They're not all medicatable. Not everything needs medication. Sometimes common sense works. That's what I'm trying to tell you, is that there's an epidemic of loss of common sense. An epidemic of loss of common sense. We have a nation of ninnies. Everyone walks around, medication. I want my medication. I want my crutch. I want my drug. I want my medication. I want Uncle Sam to pay my medication. I'm sickly. I want my drug. Well, maybe you need your drug and maybe you don't. Maybe you're just a weak individual who refuses to take control of your own life. You know, you have diabetes and you're still eating Krispy Kreme. I wouldn't give you medication. I'd make you pay for your medication if you refuse to modify your diet. And you want me to pay for your diabetic treatment, for your treatment for diabetes, and so forth and so on. If you're not willing to help yourself, why should I help you? That's why our taxes are out of control in this country. But more than that, psychiatry is often used as mind control, societal control in our country. And I want to make a very big political point now, because we're moving very, very close to the ex-Soviet Union, where psychiatrists were used to diagnose people who were antisocial or antipolitical. They were then taken away by the secret police, medicated into submission, and thrown into re-education camps. If you think we're not moving in that direction, my friend, you are mistaken. Some well-meaning psychiatrists are this far away from recommending that political dissidents in this country not be medicated. Trust me on this. I'm sure it's being discussed that anyone who suffers this phobia or that phobia can only be treated with major pharmaceuticals. And I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that it's going to come from the homosexual radical community, that Christians who believe in the Word of God are psychiatrically impaired by definition. Hey, is anyone else out there sick and tired of nothing but bad economic news? I am. I'm about to give you some good news before Obama spreads the wealth any further. I just finished my 7th annual briefing with Swiss America CEO Craig Smith. Sure, we cover the economic crisis, but more importantly, we look beyond the crisis toward timeless economic solutions. We discuss why gold is the financial light of the world, no matter what happens on Wall Street or to the dollar. You must hear this new CD entitled 9 Economic Realities of 2009 and read Swiss America's 27th annual newsletter, The Financial Light of the World. Both are free to my audience by calling toll-free now, 800-289-2646, 800-BUYCOIN. For nearly a decade, I've told you to trust gold coins and Swiss America. Today, it's more urgent than ever. And with bailouts now totaling over $7 trillion, that's 10 times the amount Americans told lawmakers to decline, yet they passed it anyway. Enough is enough. Call 800-289-2646, 800-BUYCOIN now.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
Danny, on K Dawn in Las Vegas, go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm dying over here to hear anything you say positive. I'm a fan, but I think you're becoming a chronic pessimist.
Wait a minute. Is it illegal to be a pessimist?
We're not talking about law. We're talking about an entertainment show with information. I'm referring people to you, too, that I've referred.
Oh, well, excuse me. What do you want me to do? Perform for you?
Mike?
Well, what do you want me to do? Get a string that you can pull from Las Vegas?
Mike, a little bit of positive. That's all.
All right, why don't you give me something positive? Go ahead, you give me something positive. Yeah, there's some nice optimistic music for you out there to keep all your Republicans happy. Can do. your mind to it. Put your shoulder to the grind. Put your shoulder to the wheel. Make up your mind. You can win. You're a winner. No negative. Be positive. Think positive. Only positive music and positive news. Everything's good. Everything's coming up roses. Bush is not a liberal. Bush is a conservative. John McCain is a good conservative. Be positive. Turn it off. You know, anything I'll do is I'll rewrite the Bible. I'll call it the Newly Revised Optimist Bible, because if you read the Bible, it's really very negative. Take Jeremiah. You know, Jeremiah, it should be illegal to read Jeremiah in America because it's so negative. It's not positive. It's not optimistic. For example, it says, "For of old time I have broken the yoke and burst the bands, and you said I will not transgress. But upon every hill and under every leafy tree, you reclined playing the harlot." Now, that should not be allowed in the new Republican America. The new Republicrat America should revise the Bible, change Jeremiah, and it should say, "Upon every high hill and under every leafy tree, you did recline playing the clown." And then the next passage says, "Yet I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the degenerate plant?" No good. That gets people in Las Vegas unhappy. So we're going to revise that into a newly revised Optimist Bible. And the phrase in Jeremiah will now say, "I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the happy clown?" See, this way everybody will be much happier. We have the can-do spirit here in America. We have to think Ronald Reagan. We have to think pioneers. We have to think cowboys and Indians. We have to think conquering Hitler. We must never allow a negative thought in our mind, because it's very, very bad for the economy. We must be positive. Arbeit macht frei. Every morning, go to work and say to yourself, "Work makes you free." That's what we need, is positive. Positive. Positive, I say. We're going to outlaw negativity in America. That's right, in the new America, negativity will be outlawed, and the Old Testament, particularly Jeremiah, will be burned, because it is oh so negative. No Isaiah, no Jeremiah, no Judges, no Ecclesiastes, no Numbers, no Leviticus, no Exodus. Too negative, I say. Out with thee, out with thee. Okay, I'll be positive. People have requested that I be positive. I guess I try to be positive. I don't know how to be positive. Well, okay, let's start with this. This morning when I was making tea, I said to myself, your one mistake in 2007 was that you forgot to be thankful to God for all the gifts that you have been given. That's hard for me, because I fundamentally am not that kind of guy who gets up and I say every morning, "Thank God for what I have." I should. I admit that. So I said, if you could wake up every day and say, "You know what, look at what you have." See, I personally don't want anything. Let me start with me. I don't want any more success. I don't need another bestseller. I'm not boasting now. Please don't take it the wrong way. I don't want anything right now for myself. That's not what's making me unhappy. I'm not like resentful. I'm not like unhappy that I don't have this or I don't have that. I don't want anything. All I am asking, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for giving me what I give, because I told you how this happened. I don't want to go, "It sounds hokey." Things had gone really, really, really wrong for me 15 years ago. No matter what I did, everything went wrong in my life. I mean, in terms of career-wise. There was no one. I was like a wildcatter. I had turned it into a family joke. I said to myself, "You know what? I'm like a wildcatter who keeps drilling for wells and keeps coming up with dry holes." I said, "But don't accuse me of ever having stopped throwing down those, you know, drilling. I drilled 1,000 wells and they wouldn't come up, because the cards were stacked against me. Because I wasn't the right race, you get it?" So anyway, but the long story is, I made a prayer. I said to God, "Please, God, I've worked so hard, I can't take it anymore. I don't even want to tell you, I was 50 years old, and I had almost tapped out. I was ready to tap out and check out. I couldn't take it anymore." Because no matter which way I turned, they said, "White males need not apply." I got to tell you, on the MS, that's what I'm telling you. That's the way it was. Everything was like that. So then I made the tapes, and I said, "God, please, just give me a living. That's all I ask you for. I don't want to win the lottery." I said, "Oh, please give me a living. I've tried so hard. I've done so many good things. Why are you doing this to me?" And then when I stopped saying, "Why are you doing this to me?" and said only, "Please give me a living," radio came along. Now, here's the interesting thing. It didn't come to me like in a lottery winning. You ask anybody who knows me going back to the first radio show. I have had to crawl on broken glass. I had to walk through fire. I had to jump hurdles in order to get where I am. Everyone knows that. And in order to keep this thing alive called the Savage Nation, it's an enormous, enormous challenge to do this correctly or as best as you can every day. 3 hours a day, like clockwork. Get up every day and train for it, run for it, eat for it, sleep for it, plan for it. Because if you miss that curtain call or you get into the wrong state of mind by the time that 06 hits, you're out of business, kiddo. This business is a business that you can die with one wrong sentence, as you well know, with all of the left-wing fascists out there trying to trip you up because we no longer live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We live in a different country today. We live in a totally different Soviet-style America. But I'm up for the task. I'll bury them before they bury me. I will put them in an orange jumpsuit before they put me in one. I will get them out of business before they get me out of business. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you. People have left the political arena who you thought would be around forever, and I told you they wouldn't be around. People have left this campaign who I knew didn't stand a chance in you-know-where to get anywhere, and I knew they were doing it just for the publicity. They're gone. They're gone not with the wind. They're gone like dust in the wind. What I'm saying to you is there's a lot to be thankful for. But when God answers your prayers, whatever they may be, it often comes with a burden. It's not the lottery. You don't get X, you know, millions of dollars a year for nothing. You got to work it. You got to give back. So that's the whole message that I got to remember is give back. So I want to go through one more thing. I don't know where this soul searching has come from. I've written four books now, four in a row, New York Times bestsellers. That's a heck of an achievement. I got to tell you, I don't care who you are. I don't care what you try to do. You try to do even one bestseller. I did four in a row. That's like four Babe Ruth kind of things for a guy like me. So what more do I need? What more do I want, I say to myself. The family is okay. The kids are okay. They don't need me. I'm not working for anybody. Everybody's doing well enough to get through life. Whatever years I may have left, I said to myself, what do I want to do with the years that remain? So I was contemplating this for the last 9 months now. What do I really want to do? So I contemplate what people normally do when they retire. Unfortunately, I'm an inner-city kid. I always have been in my heart. I don't golf. I don't play tennis. I don't knock people who do. The sports never appealed to me, that kind of thing. I found that they were too distant. They were too slow for me. I'm not saying you're slow or a retard if you play golf. I didn't say that. I understand the great skill it takes. It's just not for me. Okay, let's leave it at that. So what kind of sports do I like? What am I going to do, go boating 7 days a week? Like a yucca puck with a captain's hat? I'm going to ride around tooting my horn with a dog? What kind of life is that? I'm going to travel? I've done more traveling than any human being should ever want to do. I did it when I was young. I've been a lot of places. I've done a lot of things, but I didn't just travel for travel's sake. I traveled to collect medicinal plants. The collections unto themselves are worthy of a life's work. They were put into herbaria all over the world. Unto itself, I never talk about that. Is it as good as Jonas Salk inventing the polio vaccine? No, but it's a significant little step in science that I made. What I'm saying is I could do that. I could go back to collecting plants as a hobby, but I said I don't really want to do that anymore. I did it. I don't want that isolation and loneliness on islands anymore, sitting alone on islands with people I don't really understand and in villages every night. You ask anyone who's actually really done it, there's no romanticism involved. It's very, very difficult, and it's very soul-wrenching to sit in a strange village on a straw mat at night, night after night. It's not a lot of fun. When you're young, maybe you can imagine it's kind of a romantic thing to do, but when you are at a different point in your life, there's no romance in it. So the point I'm making, in a long story short, is that there was nothing that I really wanted to do outside of what I have been doing for these last 15 years, and that is look at the political machine as it goes by, watch America as it goes by, and try to make a difference. Now, am I imagining that I've made a difference? No, I'll tell you, we've had some real victories. For that little film critic with the insignificant show with no ratings who thinks that the conservative movement is dead, let me remind the little film critic that this show, Stop the Dubai Port Steal, Does that mean the conservative movement is dead, Mr. Film Critic? This little show stopped the illegal immigration amnesty bill. We stopped it dead in its tracks. Not just this show, but this was the pounding drum of the anti-illegal immigration amnesty movement. Did you hear what I just said to you? We've had two or three really big victories on this radio show. And what I'm saying to you is there are other things we might be able to do, both negative and positive, to save this country, to put it back on its course, to pray to God that somebody comes along who is worthy of the title president. It's possible this little show can have some influence on that. You say, well, are you being a megalomaniac? What influence can you have? Nobody ever refers to you. You don't exist, Michael. Well, go on to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the 49 million people who have voted on my website. And I can guarantee you that the listeners to this show will determine the outcome of the next election. I can guarantee it. And I didn't pick anybody yet. And I don't intend to. But I can guarantee you that the listeners will pick the next president of the United States of America. And I'm not even sure that that person is yet on the ballot. I'm not sure that that person has yet come forward. It's possible there's a person who has not yet come forward who will appear and who will tell America exactly what they want to hear, because that's what the American people are screaming, clamoring, praying, and dreaming for. And the people will rally around them like metal filings around a magnet. That's what's going to happen. Maybe. And so, therefore, there are things we can do. And that's why I'm still in radio, because I feel that I can still make a difference. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where I find myself today. Does that answer some questions? I really didn't plan on this, you know, soul-searching exposure today, but that's it. Savage. Chico in Indiana, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage.
Hello. What's on your mind, my friend?
Listen, I want to tell you that you've helped a lot of ex-gang members. And
really? How did I do that?
Oh, just by the way you talk, your straight talk. And let me tell you, when I was growing up, we had uncles like you who tried to knock sense into our heads.
Isn't that beautiful? I got to tell you, man, I love this call. I love the call because we got cultural differences here. We got language differences here. We got age differences here. And look how you are saying to me that we communicate. That's the most important thing.
Dr. Savage, if you sat in my kitchen table, you'd be just like one of us. Let me tell
you. That's amazing. That is amazing. That is amazing. Well, look, I'm not going to start now by backtracking and say I understand why you did it. But the fact is I understand why you did it. I can understand why some kids wind up in gangs who didn't want to be there. But they had to be there, they'd be dead. That's another story. Not everybody's in the gang is an evil person, and not everybody's not in a gang is a nice person. We understand that as well. Am I correct, Chico?
Correct, sir. Let me tell you, I had to come to Indiana to get out of the state, but I work with gang members here in Indiana, Indianapolis. And I turn the radio on, and I make them listen to you.
That's amazing. Well, it's because I reflect. Remember, I'm an immigrant son, Chico. Although from a different culture, I am an immigrant son, so I still see America in a sort of distant way. It's not like I'm Father America. I'm part of something, but I'm also not really there yet. You know what I'm saying, Chico?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let me tell you.
There's other elements as well, which transcend culture, race, age, language. And those are traditional family values, Chico. I think you'd have to agree with me that when I say that 7 out of 10 black people, for example, voted against gay marriage, and 7 out of Hispanic people voted against gay marriage, even though they may have voted for Obama, it's because their family values and my family values happen to be the same.
That's right. That's correct.
And tell me, what is more fundamental to any man who's really a man other than his family? There's nothing more fundamental.
That's right.
Do you teach the kids, the young guys who are in gangs, that the real tough job is to be a father rather than to be a killer?
That's right, to be a man.
Any guy could bury his heart and shoot another man and think he's a man, but you know what it takes to be a man is not to shoot another man, but to help another man. The healer is a greater man than the killer.
That's right, Dr. Savage.
Do you teach them these kind of things?
I do, and like I say, for 3 hours a night, you teach them in the in some garages sometimes. In the garage, I put the radio on, and there you are talking.
I love it, man. I really love it. I wish I could be there with you drinking a beer right now.
Savage.
Peter, WOR, New York City. Make it succinct. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Yes, Dr. Savage, a pleasure talking to you. I just want to say that I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I can't wait to, at 6:06, when you come on, I just can't wait for that time to come. You are your destiny is for President of the United States. That's the only destiny I see in this land. You are the salvation of America, and Dr. Savage, you have to do it. I don't know how you're going to do it, but you got millions.
Peter, I know this. I know that your sincerity is heartfelt. On my website, I think we have over 75 million people who have gone and said, Mike, leave radio, run for office. I can't believe the numbers. We passed the 75 million mark. I don't know how accurate this is, but I'll tell you right now, it's in the many millions, Peter, of people who are fed up with the two-party system. They know that they're both cons. But you know, Peter, haven't we seen in this election that without money, you can't get anywhere in this country? Haven't we seen that the system is bought and sold like so many pieces of silver? Perhaps 20 pieces of silver, if you get the meaning, Peter. Peter, how do you run against a machine where a guy like Barack Obama, an unknown man with no credit to his name, no known books to his name other than a fabricated book about his life, with no history of having achieved one bill of any significance, could attract crowds of 75,000? The answer is money, 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 brainwashing and power. You know and I know, if you're a Vietnam vet, then you know something about the history of the world, because you fought for this country, that the propaganda minister for Adolf Hitler had a name, and whose name was Joseph Goebbels, said the following, Peter. Goebbels said that if you tell a big lie often enough, it will become the truth. So if you tell the big lie that Obama is the savior over and over and over, and no matter how big a lie it was at first, the propaganda machine is daily. The gullible, weak-minded people start to believe it. Just as the myth of global warming, Peter, if you tell that big lie over and over and over again, people start to believe it. Remember, in the beginning, the Germans didn't particularly love the Jews. They didn't particularly hate the Jews. But the big lie machine started saying Jews are this, Jews are that, Jews did this, Jews did that. And it was every day. It was like a drip of water on the mind, on the consciousness of the German people, till eventually enough Germans started to believe it was true. Peter, we're living in the greatest propaganda time in the history of this country, where the media is pushing this unknown man, where the media is pushing the myth of global warming, the media is pushing the lie that all immigrants come here to work, the media is pushing the myth that two homosexuals can get married, the media is pushing one myth after another, Peter, and they're destroying the public mind. Do you understand that?
And doctor, but you have to, you are the only salvation for us.
Peter, listen to me. I don't need to be president to be your salvation. Listen to me. God is not the president of the United States, is he? But he's your salvation. Anyone who picks up a Bible has a salvation in that. And God is eternal. He doesn't have to run for office. He doesn't need to be a congressman or a senator.